proceed?
Yes.
Yes? All right. Well, first off, I'm glad you all made it here. We shared your concerns about air travel over the last several days. We've all had a little bit of a struggle in that, so I appreciate your efforts to get here. We decided to roll it back to the early 1990s when the Supreme Court only had 5 justices. So, just kidding. Actually, Justices Pickering and Bell were unable to be here today. They will be listening to the arguments and taking part in deliberations. And when we make a decision in the case, I believe Justice Bell was able to join by Zoom. Can you hear me, Justice Bell?
Yes, I'm sorry. I can hear you. I just couldn't.
Okay, great. I'll try and remember to check in every so often to see if you have any questions, but obviously feel free to jump in at any time, okay?
Great, thank you.
All right, and as a reminder to both sides, you now have 17 total minutes of argument, so the first 2 minutes are free from any interruption by the court. Use those 2 minutes however you see fit to kind of introduce your case to us. Thereafter, are you going to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, and I wanted to give 7 minutes to Ms. Mehta to argue on behalf of the City of Reno.
Okay.
I'll reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Minutes. All right, and everybody knows how the bell will come on and ding at the appropriate time periods for you. If you keep going into your rebuttal time, you're using that up on your own, obviously. So with that, I will go ahead and turn it over and allow you to go ahead and proceed.
Gail Kachkalanis on behalf of...
Thank you. You can, do you want to approach the podium? You can proceed.
All right. There are two fundamental problems with the district court's order in this case. The first is that the district court essentially reasoned that because Scenic Nevada didn't have standing to bring a petition for judicial review, it automatically had standing to bring a writ. The fact that it didn't have standing to bring a petition for judicial review is because it's not a party to the development agreement. It doesn't allege that it owns land affected by the development agreement. It didn't fall within the statute, giving a party's right to to file a petition for judicial review. But that doesn't mean that a writ petition is appropriate. In my mind, that makes the writ petition even more inappropriate. A writ is an extraordinary measure granted only in exceptional cases to compel an action that's mandated by law or to correct a manifest abuse of discretion. At issue here was the City of Reno's approval of a development agreement and when they entered the development agreement, they did it via an ordinance. So it was essentially a legislative act. The city of Reno had a city council that deliberated on it, voted it, and determined that this was appropriate for the City of Nevada. This court made it clear in City of Reno versus Citizens for Cold Springs that it's very reluctant. It doesn't want to interfere with legislative decisions like zoning and land use, the type of decision that the City of Reno made in this case. Seeing Nevada essentially wants to substitute its own judgment for how the City of Reno should have voted and get the court to compel that. And I think that was totally inappropriate by the district court to weigh in on the merits here of what was essentially a discretionary and legislative decision. The second fundamental error that the district court made was delving into the merits. It ruled on 3 area identification signs. And with regard to what's called the archway sign, it correctly ruled that the words Neon Line District are not promoting any specific commercial interests. It's merely identifying an area of town, like the Riverwalk or the River Boardwalk District or the Fremont District. It's just identifying an area. But the district court held that the same language, the exact same language on 2 other signs, was commercial speech somehow. And my qualm there is that, a sign that says Neon Line District. Either it does or it doesn't promote commercial speech, but it cannot, it can't be non-commercial speech for purposes of one sign and yet be commercial speech for purposes of two other signs. And that's essentially what the
Council,
district court ruled.
I also noted that distinction in the district court's ruling. I guess the only difference I saw on the signs was that the other two have the kind of the directionality turn left on 4th Street.
Yes.
Does that make a difference or should it make a difference?
Not in my mind, Your Honor. And that is true. I think one or both of them, you know, had minimal directions such as left on 4th Street. But left on 4th Street is merely a direction. That doesn't add to the commercial interest. It's not promoting a specific hotel, a specific entity. And I think you have to understand that within this Neon Line district, there are lots of businesses that own property there. There's a lot of residential housing there. So when you have a sign that says Neon Line District, you're not promoting any one commercial interest there. And I think that's a fundamental problem in this case. Now, I want to quickly address Scenic Nevada's argument that this 2017 settlement agreement somehow gives us standing in this case. That agreement addressed, in my mind, what's a completely different issue. About actual billboards, which are also defined as off-premises advertising displays. And the settlement agreement talks about billboard owners, if they want to move a billboard or put up a new billboard, they have to turn in these banked receipts, and there's only a limited number left. And that was part of the settlement agreement. But here, what's at issue are these three area identification signs. And by definition in the Reno Municipal Code, they're not these billboards. And so the 2017 settlement agreement has nothing to do with this case. But even if it did, and even if you accepted the argument that the 2017 settlement agreement somehow gives Scenic Nevada a special interest or legal right on which to base its standing, that proves that a writ of mandamus is inappropriate because they have a legal remedy. They could have sued the city of Reno for breach of contract, and they never did that in this case. But that in itself is their legal remedy, making it all the more inappropriate that they're proceeding with a writ petition here. And I would also just highlight that when you look at the Reno Municipal Code, and it has a whole section on definitions, and it defines sign. And then within sign, it has all these subdivisions of signs. And I really invite you to look. The list goes on and on. When I printed it off, I think it's 3 pages worth of subdefinitions of signs. But it defines area identification sign as exactly what was going on in this case. These three signs that merely identify an area or, you know, a district to go to. And then the definitions of billboards or off-premises advertising displays specifically have, you know, a part that you need a commercial interest. You need to be promoting a specific commercial interest. And I think that's just not the case here. Turning back to standing, if you look at the definition in the Reno Municipal Code here, it does define aggrieved person. And it says an aggrieved person is one whose personal right or right of property is adversely and substantially affected by the action of a discretionary body. And here, there is no right of property. Scenic Nevada doesn't even allege that it owns any property in or affected by the development agreement. And the only hook it gives for personal right is that 2017 settlement agreement, which, as I said, you know, is inapplicable to this case. And moreover, if that is the right for standing, then they should have sued under that agreement. I will just highlight one further fact before I cede the time to Ms. Mehta, and that's that Scenic Nevada did file a petition for judicial review in this case. It got severed pursuant to this court's decision in the City of Henderson case. And then the district court in that case dismissed the petition for judicial review, finding that Scenic Nevada did not have standing. It was not an aggrieved party. It didn't fall within the statutory scope. And Scenic Nevada did not appeal the dismissal of its petition for judicial review. So I know there's some arguments in their brief. Well, let us proceed with the writ, and if not, let us proceed with the petition for judicial review. It's too late for that. This case does not encompass that. If they wanted to separately appeal that ruling, they should have. And with that, I'll cede the time to Ms. Mehta.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jasmine Mehta, on behalf of the City of Reno. The reason that the city appealed is because the district court concluded, and the city submits erroneously concluded, that the ordinances, resolutions, and regulations applicable to the land at the time of the development agreement can be more restrictive in a development agreement, but not less restrictive. They operate as a ceiling, but they can't be relaxed. And we submit that that is wrong for three reasons. The first is the plain language of the statute. NRS 278-0201, subsection 3, says, unless the agreement otherwise provides, the ordinances, resolutions, or regulations applicable to that land and governing the permitted uses, density, and standards for design, improvements, and construction are those in effect at the time the agreement was made. Let me say that again. Unless the agreement otherwise provides, existing code is the playing field. But if the existing ordinances are the ceiling, there really is no reason for that clause at the beginning of the sentence.
But Ms. Mehta, wouldn't that just mean that if the agreement doesn't otherwise provide, then it's the existing ordinances that are going to apply all through carrying out the agreement? And if it does otherwise provide, then it would change when the ordinances and generally applicable rules change over time?
It could be read that way, but I submit that that is not the language of the statute. The statute is, unless otherwise provided, the, you know, the existing code is what applies, and it freezes in time the existing code. But there are other provisions that, for example, NRS 278.315, that allow extensions of deadlines or allow substitution of processes for approving use permits.
So are you saying that if the ordinances provide generally applicable rules for development in the city or in a particular area of the city or what have you, that the city could enter an agreement with a particular entity and they wouldn't be subject to those generally applicable rules?
I think that is technically under the statute, yes, but as a practicality, no, because this is a public process. The city council has to make a determination in a public hearing whether to allow this kind of deviation. And to be fair, that happens all the time. For example, variances come before planning commissions or city councils, and those are specifically saying, hey, we can't meet the code here. We need a variance. We need an exemption.
Well, so, Councilor, it seems like the archway sign was a built-in variance of some sort and was accepted out. But for the rest of it, it says the development agreement actually states that area identification signs are subject to applicable standards in place at the time of application. So it specifically kind of cemented the applicable code, if you would. I'm not saying that they couldn't then later seek waivers, but the actual contract itself kind of accepted out the archway, but then for the cemetery and gas station, which are the other two at issue here, seems to say that it's subject to the applicable code at the time of the contract. Is that correct?
The other two are subject to the standards that would be in place at the time that they seek a building permit, mm-hmm. which allowed for council time to, you know, there was an intention at the time to basically address the building code in its entirety and specifically the sign code. So that would allow for newly enacted regulations to apply to those two signs at the time of building permit.
And were there newly enacted regulations that would change the character, arguably, of those signs from directional to?
There are not yet. That's, you know, a long process, and it hasn't come forward yet. But it is something that the staff are currently in the process of reviewing.
Okay.
So just to be clear, the only provision in this particular development agreement that purported to change something was as to the archway sign, which the district court, at least as it stands, the district court allowed that sign to proceed per the agreement.
Correct.
Okay.
Did you want to reserve the rest of your time?
I will for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
All right, Mr. Ray, you also had filed an appeal. Do you wish to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
I think so.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mark Ray for Scenic Nevada. The order that no one seems to be happy with is this one from Department 4 in Washoe County, September 22nd, 2023. And I was reading through this again for this and struck by the fact that for the first 7 or 8, 9 pages, everything seemed normal, like a normal analysis of everything that should have been analyzed and conclusions that one could quibble with but are basically right. Then I got to the substance of this dispute, which was page 9 at the bottom, where the judge quoted NRS 278.0201 that says that in the manner prescribed by an ordinance, the governing body may, upon application of any person having a legal or equitable interest in land, enter into an agreement with that person concerning development of that land. And I thought, okay, this is the plain meaning analysis coming, but it's not. On the next page, at lines 7 to 14, the judge went into this whole discussion about equity and the general principles of equity from our forefathers and foremothers a long time ago. And it's at this point that the thing starts, the order, I believe, diverts from what we've been seeing the first pages, and it becomes sort of freelancing. It talks about equity, and I'm here to do equity, and it becomes this discussion about how developers control, so allegedly they don't, as a matter of fact, in the record, but developers control other affiliates, and those affiliates own the land, and this control generates an equitable interest and so forth. And then they say, the judge says at line 22, Scenic does not contest the developer controls these affiliates. And then it says a reference, see opposition at 10. That means the city's opposition said something about Scenic Nevada doesn't contest control, which isn't true. Of course we contested control. That's why we did all that discovery and got all the records for you to show exactly how title was held. 15 months after the agreement was approved by the city, we had that. So this judge has used this concept of control because it comes from the agreement that was cited by this justice here. The development agreement talks about ownership or control, right? We all saw that. That little thing matters a lot.
Mr. Ray, I have, a more fundamental question for you, which is, why does your client get to complain about whether they own or control them or not? In other words, why does your client even have standing to make that argument here?
Well, my client, when this development agreement was approved, had in place the settlement agreement release.
Okay, so that has to do with billboards. What does that have to do with?
Yes, it does have to do with billboards.
But can you explain why that gives you client
because,
standing?
Yes, I can. Because when this came before the city council, if you go to the development agreement, they said, these are area identification signs. Mm-hmm. And then they put in the language below that, area identification signs are not subject to the regulations of billboards.
Right.
Meaning, Justice, that the city knew, and we knew, that these were billboards. Because the city was playing so deep.
I think they said the opposite. Isn't that what they said?
These area identification signs are not subject to the regulations that affect billboards. That's
right.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But nobody asked them. They just volunteered that because they knew it was a billboard up on the freeway, not.
So they said it wasn't billboards because they knew it was a billboard? Is that your position?
Yes.
Okay.
Because if you had a billboard, Justice, in Reno, one would have to have surrendered a banked receipt.
Right.
The developers, and they did not surrender a banked receipt.
Right.
Therefore, the whole idea of it was to evade that requirement.
So if it's not a billboard, there's not a requirement for a banked receipt,
I apologize,
right?
For talking over you. What did you say?
Sorry. If it's not a billboard, there's not a requirement for a banked receipt, correct?
That is right.
Okay.
These apply to billboards. And a
right.
billboard is an off-premises sign, correct? Okay.
That's so, one of the requirements.
Okay, so if we look at that, our agreement, which is this settlement agreement of release, was a very specific thing. When the city got in trouble, they had issued a bunch of bank receipts, which this body held were unconstitutionally issued.
Right.
The city had a problem because all the billboard companies, specifically Lamar, which owns most of the billboards, was right. suing them.
Yes.
In the lawsuits that were settled by this agreement.
Right.
In that lawsuit, Seating Nevada prevailed in front of Judge Freeman up in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And after that happened, when we entered this agreement is all about those banked receipts. And so they knew, the city knew, that a banked receipt was required for a billboard.
Why not just sue for breach of contract?
Pardon me?
Why not just then sue for breach of contract?
That's a remedy for breach of contract, not for invalidating an ordinance. The reason why...
Why do you have standing to invalidate the entire ordinance when your settlement agreement was very narrow?
I believe the ordinance to be, in reference to the 78 parcels that are part of this district, all or not. I believe, and I didn't go beyond... I didn't fashion a remedy for what happens once the ordinance is invalidated, but... An agreement can be done, an amended agreement can be done, including all the people who own the parcels as it's supposed to be under 278-0201. That's the way I see it. Now, you could say, well, let's just take 31 of them out of this agreement. And then I say, if that's the case, then the ordinance has to go because it approved those 31 parcels. That's why I say it's all or nothing. It's the ordinance itself that we challenged.
The only part that is affected by the settlement agreement that Scenic had entered is signs. There's all kinds of other things covered by that agreement, including signs, right?
However, those all kinds, yes, Justice, if you look at the agreement, and I know you have, I understand that.
Yes.
I get it. We've all read it. It's a development agreement to provide certain benefits to developers. It does not specifically describe the density of housing, where these buildings, where they're located, or any of that stuff you find in a typical development agreement. It is basically to provide these benefits to developers. However, Exhibit H is very specific and deals with signs. In other words, even though there was no place where they're putting buildings, there was definitely in this agreement specifics about where the signs would be and what kind of signs would be. So it's very specific compared to the buildings. What I'm pointing out to you is this development agreement may have allowed development sometime in the next 20 years, which is nonspecific of what it has to be. But with regards to signs, it actually had pictures of them, showed where they would be on a map. So it was a really important thing about the signs are pretty integral to it.
Does Scenic own any property within this development?
No.
What is the beneficial interest then in this project?
Okay, so Scenic Nevada is the party to the agreement that says if you're going to allow a billboard, of course, you have to have a banked receipt. That's what this was all about. The city would have been sued by every billboard company because the banked receipts were invalid. So we said the city is not going to be sued. We gave that up. We gave that up on one condition, and that's sections 5, 6, and 7 of this agreement, mm-hmm. settlement agreement. And that condition was they have to surrender a bank receipt when they put up a billboard. By that attrition of the expiration of all the remaining bank receipts, we will end up in a situation where there are no more billboards being constructed or built in Reno.
But the city is already determined that those were not billboards, but directional signs. And there is a level of deference that we must afford to the city for that determination. In my estimation, the district court performed a de novo analysis on all three signs. Why should we not remand it back down to the court to afford the appropriate deference under the law? Based on the city's classifications?
The fact that the city has deference under the law to its when it makes determination doesn't mean that there's no that whatever the city decides has to be followed by a court. This court said to the city of Reno the last time I was here in the case that was decided by, written by Justice Pickering in 2016, that the city's interpretation of the banking relocation ordinance was completely wrong, 100% the opposite of what the Constitution of Nevada states. And Judge Freeman had to then come after that, because the city continued to issue those building permits, as they do for signs. That's what the battles have been about. The city issued those permits, even though this court had said those banking relocation items are unconstitutional. So yes, you could say that the city has an opinion on what the statute means, but look at the, in this case, what the judge is looking at. We got a sign on the freeway, 3/4 of a mile from the closest point, by as the crow flies, on the freeway, and it says, Reno Neon Line, take a left at 4th Street. Now, that's a billboard for a lot of reasons, and for all the things that are in the statute, as Justice Kadish was mentioning, that is a billboard. Now, they could say they called it area identification. They can call it a directional sign, although it's not. The directional signs typically are highway marker signs. But this determination by the city arbitrarily to call that sign a area identification sign is nonsensical. And they fault the judge, excuse me.
Is it your position that all area identification signs are also billboards?
No.
Okay, so no, explain the difference.
Sure. Under this Reno Municipal Code and most codes of most cities, the signs are divided into on-premise and off-premise, the off-premise being the ones that we call billboards and the on-premise being those normal business signs that you see at every business. So the difference is an area identification sign is regulated depending on whether it's on or off premises. An area identification sign.
You don't believe a area identification sign can exist on its own outside of the definitions of on or off premises signs.
Right, because it's regulated. All signs are either one or the other. And that's true, they are. They're either one or another. And I quoted in my brief, I quoted in my brief what those area identification signs, how they're regulated, and the fact is that there are signs in Reno that are not regulated, and they're all listed in the code.
So if a sign says downtown Reno this way, that's a off-premise billboard, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
However, it's called a directional sign, and so as a directional sign, it's not treated the same as a billboard. You don't have to have a bank receipt.
Let me go back to two things. First off, one of them I hope is an easy question. It seemed to me on the issue of standing that you disavowed at oral argument before the district court that representational standing was at issue. Even though on appeal you're kind of trying to uphold the district court making a finding on that, you all kind of said, I don't know why we're talking about this. We didn't write anything about this. This is a whole different thing. So are you conceding today, since your focus was on the 2017 agreement, that that's really the basis of your standing argument?
That representational standing is the basis?
No, that the agreement is the basis.
Mostly, because that's why we became involved. We saw that they're having a billboard on the freeway. That's why we first looked at this, is because of that reason, because it matters so much. And that's what happened in the prior litigations. It happened to us before. So that was the thing that started it, yes.
I get it. Okay. And then, of course, let me go back to Justice Lee's question. I mean, I get what you're saying about, look, the city's not entitled to deference if they've screwed up something that they've done in terms of making their determination.
Mm-hmm.
But we still got to follow the law. So to the extent the district court did not apply the presumption that goes to the city's decision appropriately, if the district court errs, regardless of whether it could ultimately be found that the city was wrong in their determination, doesn't that require a finding that the district court erred and they need to redo it in the appropriate way?
The district court was interpreting a statute or an ordinance, so I don't see there's any reason to keep the district court from doing that.
But doesn't the court have an obligation to utilize the legal presumption that applies in undergoing their analysis?
Yes, unless it's rebutted, yes. But they don't always,
I'm not saying they have to 100% defer to the city, but they have to apply the presumption appropriately as they reach a decision. They can't just ignore it.
I mean, of course, we've read the order that I was going to go through. But all of this in the order is the judge explaining that what the position was of the city, of the developers, and of Scenic Nevada, and then taking that and saying, here's what my conclusions are, as a matter of fact in some cases, and as a matter of law in other cases. So I believe, Justice Herndon, that is exactly what the judge did, is considered whatever the city's presumption was or they were allowed. It may not be articulated. I have applied this presumption, but the city, but what the city's position was definitely followed by the court. And then the court disagreed with it for obvious reasons. I mean, they find fault with the court for pointing out what's perfectly obvious. It's a billboard.
What makes it a billboard, Mr. Ray?
What is it?
What makes it a billboard? What about the neon district sign?
Basically,
as opposed to directional thing, what makes it a billboard?
Okay, so this is a big issue actually for the U.S. Supreme Court as well, and they're because of the content issue, but because it advertises goods or services not sold on the premises, as
what,
is.
What goods or services are advertised on that sign?
They have a trademark for their services. It's called an entertainment district, and their trademark allows them the exclusive right to use that in commercially in this country. That is, Jacobs Enterprises and Jacobs Investments own the trademark for that.
Is that a party here?
No.
Okay, so I don't...
Because the only parties are the two of the 16 LLCs, Justice Case, are the only parties because they're the only ones that are parties to the agreement.
Okay.
But they have... the affiliation that they have with Jacobs, the parent companies in Cleveland, those companies own the trademark.
For Neon Line District?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. But they've changed it now to call it J Resort. That's in my brief as well. They call it the J Resort, which used to be called the Sands.
Right.
So yeah, it's very much a commercial. Yes, there's no reason for that sign on the freeway except to drive people to their J Resort, if you will, now it's called that. But drive it to their investment in their properties that they describe in the application and in the supporting declaration for the trademark. They describe all the commercial services that are provided in this district by them, which is why there's a trademark. A trademark is for commercial protection of the right to use that name. And by the way, not just a logo, the name written out, typed out in any font is covered by this trademark. So there's no question it was commercial. The judge was absolutely right about that. I mean, anyone would see that.
Mr. Ray, pardon me, yeah. If there's no question, strike that. There's clearly a dispute
yes.
between the city and yourself as to whether this is a billboard or directional. There's a dispute. Why isn't that a matter of enforcement of the settlement agreement as opposed to this otherwise kind of amorphous.
Settlement agreement we could sue for, but we wouldn't get the remedy that is we could get by writ of mandamus, which initially we thought petition for judicial review, which is to invalidate the ordinance itself. The ordinance itself is the thing that we're seeking to invalidate, not our agreement or whatever the consequence is of invalidating the ordinance to the consequence to them of on the development agreement itself. We were just saying, stop, the development agreement is void. I'm sorry to overfill my time, but thank you very much for your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ray.
I want to start with a question about the legal or equitable interests in the property where Scenic Nevada challenges that some of the parcels were held by affiliates and there wasn't this requisite legal or equitable interest in the property. First of all, I think that's a bit rich coming from Scenic Nevada, who concedes that they have no interest in the property or the property affected by it. And I think we do a good job laying out in our brief. I mean, there's detailed charts if you want to look through and see exactly what entity held each property. But I think the district court was absolutely right that the vast majority of the properties were concededly held by the developers named in the agreement, and that all the others, you know, it was either an affiliate or they had a lease or they had an option to purchase, which most of those have been exercised by now. And that there was substantial compliance with the code and with the purpose of these development agreements, which is to allow the developer to come in, you know, before everything gets pre-approved and start investing in this property.
Well, council, I mean, if someone falls on one of those properties, I'm thinking all the other entities are going to say, we don't own or control that property. We're not involved.
Possibly for other legal reasons, but I think for purposes of the development agreement, when you look at the statutes, what the purpose of that is, I mean, it's to invest in downtown Reno. And I think you correctly pointed out, Justice Kadish, that signs were just a small part of this agreement. I mean, the developers had to provide pedestrian walkways and certain things. They had to design streetlights in certain ways. So the city benefited from this. There was a lot more to this agreement. And that would be my final point on this issue, that even if the court wanted to engage in this super hyper-technical reading of the statute, the remedy would be to sever these particular parcels, not to invalidate the whole agreement. And I think if you looked at it now, a lot of, you know, the issues Scenic Nevada has, like an option to purchase, those have been exercised. So it would kind of be an exercise in futility. You invalidate it, but then, you know, they could reapply and get the same agreement in place. So and that's my point there. And I want to turn to this billboards issue. And I think, you know, this court's questions were spot on when you asked what makes, you know, a sign say Neon Line District a billboard? And Scenic Nevada's response is, well, it's obvious. Of course it is. And I kind of read the district court's decision the same way. Ipsy Dixit, like, well, of course it is, because, you know, you don't need three signs identifying the area. Well, that's not what the Reno Municipal Code says. And, you know, I'll quote for this court, you hit it spot on. This is Boulder City, a 1994 case. This court said the city's interpretation of its own land use laws is cloaked with a presumption of validity and will not be disturbed absent a manifest abuse of discretion. So there's two points I want to make here. First, the city has discretion to interpret its own code. And we've already walked through area identification signs are defined differently than billboards. And I know Scenic Nevada wants to say it all has to be on premises or off premises, but that's not the way the code reads. And at a minimum, the city of Reno has discretion and we should defer to its interpretation of its own code. The second point I would make is in the development agreement itself, Mr. Ray pointed out the sentence, but it says, quote, an area identification sign is not regulated as an off-premises advertising display or billboard. So let's say the city of Reno was wrong and the code actually, you know, does treat these things as billboards. But in the development agreement itself, it made an exception to that, and it specified that this other language would control.
Yes. I read it in the order, but that's on paper, so I'm trying to understand exactly how this played out. It seemed to me that part of the reason the court found the gas station and cemetery signs to not be area identification signs, it said that the gas station sign was too close to the archway sign, so you don't need two signs to identify a district. And then it said the cemetery sign is too far away to be an area identification sign. I mean, was it as simple as that, how that played out? That the court, very inconsistent to me to say that one's too close and that one's too far, so they can't be area identified.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's how it reads to me. And to me, there is no requirement in the code about distance. I mean, that is not distance or how many you have is not a determination of whether it's a billboard and an area identification sign. And I think that was the district court, you know, usurping the city's role and making its own, as you said, de novo determination. And that's not a requirement of the code, and it doesn't make internal logic at all either.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Do you have any questions?
She's probably muted.
All right.